WOZOLP, Knoxville.
The legendary number one hit band.
Well, I told it to play. I swear I did. It's just sitting there, though. I'm trying to play from the phone, which is not real good. Anyway, let me talk about the free thought groups here in Knoxville. This is an atheist call-in TV show that's on every weekend. I'm sorry, every week at Wednesday at 7 o'clock. Usually you would be hearing the Wombat and I, Doubter 5, talking about free thought, religion, and superstition, and atheism, and just all kinds of good things. But in the meantime, I can tell you about some of the free thought groups that are here in Knoxville and the Atheist TV show that we've been broadcasting here in Knoxville for almost 7 years. That's right. If you tune in to Comcast Channel 12 every Tuesday pretty much at 5 o'clock, you'll find the Free Thought Forum TV show. That's Comcast Channel 12 at 5 o'clock on Tuesdays. That's an atheist call-in TV show. Hold on. And there's a wombat. I'm glad to hear you coming in there, wombat. You must be listening to the radio. Hold on a second. That's why it wasn't playing. I have to take it off mute and turn up the volume. Wombat, are you with me?
I'm good. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can.
I was trying
to introduce the show, or at least keep it going until the computer comes back up. It was frozen when I came in. It was playing music, but it wasn't doing anything else. So we're hoping.
What is an episode of the Free Thought Hour without some sort of technical difficulty to start it out?
So true. So
they
true.
Can't stop us.
No.
The fates have it against us, but we're still rocking. We're still here.
Yeah. I was also talking about the free thought groups, but we can do that a little bit later on in the show. You brought a topic with you, I do believe. You mentioned it earlier.
Yes,
to me today.
I did. So let me tell you something. I think we're well into the heat of summer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's hot every day, but you know what? It's also sunny too. Like a little bit of heat, a little bit of sweat, but also a lot of sunshine. And that makes me feel happy. Makes me feel really, really fortunate to be alive every day, going to work, learning new things, talking to new people, hearing new jokes, and really what's most important, I think, is improving on the things that I thought I knew or learning new things and just improving myself overall. What I had before was limitations, and limitations is kind of a scary word for a lot of people because no one wants to really face what their limits are or acknowledge where they're located. Because there's never a guarantee that we can actually meet them. But I find that limitations are a really, really great way to know yourself better and really the first step towards improving. And can't really improve until you know what your limitations are. So I guess in a nutshell, how sad would it be if you had zero limitations? How sad would it be if you were a perfect, completely good and an amazing, all-powerful being, because the one thing you wouldn't be able to do, if that were the case, is improve upon yourself.
Right.
And there's such a gratifying feeling of just pushing your limitations a little bit further. Not getting rid of them, because they'll always still be there, but seeing them progress further and further and growing as a person because of it.
Small victories, you'd never be able to have any.
True. So what I wanted to do is just talk about a show about limitations. I think last episode we talked about selfishness, and a lot of people seem to shirk away from that as well. Let's talk about limitations and why they're a good thing. Why do you think they're good?
Me? Limitations? It's hard to bring something to mind on that.
Oh, are you saying you're that perfect too?
I have very few limitations. But I'm sure that you brought the topic, you brought a few limitations with you as well, so go ahead.
All right, okay, so we were talking about science terms at work today, and stay with me. If you want, I can put this in naval terms too, because I was talking to my sister as well. But so the whole thing is, there's like very cool things. Science has a way of defining things in very, very small, bite-sized pieces that make specific sense within that particular context. And when you take it out of that context, it doesn't make it sense anymore. So, for example, we can say something like, hey, this is a tree, you know, it's made up of atoms, and atoms are made up of mass. But I can't, like, apply that to things that don't have, I can't apply that same, like, breakdown to things that don't have mass. I can't say, like, here's light, it's a form of electromagnetic radiation,
mm-hmm.
it's made up of atoms, and the atoms have mass. It's like, no, light isn't made up of, like, matter. So we have other words that we use to describe things that are other than, like, for niche forms of matter or energy, we have very specific terms for them. We have limited terms that are specific to those things. And it's good to have terms that are specific for certain things because sometimes you just need to think in that particular mindset in order to get what you're really trying to convey. And I think another good example of that is, for example, naval terms. If I was on a ship, one of the sides is the starboard, and I think that's the right side of the ship. You're
yeah.
a Navy guy,
uh-huh.
don't you?
Starboard,
okay.
right. Mm-hmm.
But if I was, like, in a building, I couldn't say, hey, I'm on the starboard side of the building. Like, that wouldn't make as much sense. Or if I was driving a car, I couldn't normally say the starboard side of a car.
You could.
Especially in my time.
Because at least it has a fore and aft, then it has a right
oh,
and left.
Oh, look at that.
Starboard and larboard.
Well, if I was in my garden, I couldn't say it that way, right?
Not unless it had a direction.
Sure. But what I like about that is we can say things and we know what we mean as long as we're talking within a particular context.
Mm-hmm.
The limitations of the word actually help us understand each other because we know the context of what we're talking about when we say that word.
Mm-hmm.
I made a little test and I went around and I talked to people like last week and asked them, what do you mean when you say faith? Would you mind explaining that to me?
Are you saying
each
faith?
And every single
F-A-I-T-H.
What do you mean when you say faith? Like, what do you, when you, like, I know you are, I know you're a believer. I know faith is a big part of your belief system. Could
mm-hmm.
you mind explaining to me what you mean when you say faith? What does it mean to you? And every single time I got a question, an answer, and I can give you some examples. I got people who gave me one person who gave me the literal translation of Hebrews, I think 11:1 or 11:10.
Uh-huh.
Is,
the evidence of things not
faith,
seen.
Perfect. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
You get Bible book cookies.
Yeah.
And then I got other people who are saying things like, it's the confidence that God will act in your life according to his plan. Which I like the start because I do believe faith is more or less a confidence statement.
Yeah.
But the confidence that God will act according to his plan is
mm-hmm.
just so outside of what you have control over,
yeah.
that it makes it hard for me to define whether something that actually happened was according to God's plan or not.
You got to be very careful here because you may be very close, and I think you're already across the line of equivocation. Faith, don't make the mistake that a word only has one definition. If you look up the word faith, you might get seven different definitions. And one of those definitions
sure.
may be religious faith, you know, faith in things unseen. But another definition of that, what might be a common expectation of daily, daily expectation of things that have no guarantee. You know, that type of thing. Like if I step my foot on the brake when I'm driving,
right.
I have a general expectation that it will slow the car down, but that's based on years of experience and knowledge about how brakes work and how cars work. But I mean, when I say faith that my car is going to stop, or if I have faith that my wife is true to me, you know, that type of thing, that is not religious faith. And you have a problem there if you just say faith and just expect everybody to know which faith that you're referring to. And some people do take advantage of that by equivocating them all into the same term just to be able to make their point or sell their religion.
So I do agree with you, and I just want to reiterate that I did set up the question as, hey, I know you're a believer.
Mm-hmm.
I know faith is a big part of your belief system.
Mm-hmm.
Would you mind explaining to me what faith means to you?
Right.
So at least hopefully with those series of questions, I don't get a general layman's, oh, this faith is, you know, I hope there's something in my fridge when I eat it, or I hope this milk isn't spoiled.
Yeah.
I hope I get something that's related to the belief system, because
right.
that's what I was framing it around.
Uh-huh.
Again, context helps. And what I want to do is limit their answer to specifically what faith means to their faith, or their beliefs. And just like the examples you brought up, I got those examples as well. I got, you know, faith is just, you know, a knowledge of something that's going to happen that that you have examples of in the past, or I have a faith in believing in something despite the presence of evidence, or just the
or evidence against, or in spite of evidence against it.
Right. I even had one. I wish I had my list in front of me, but I had one that was particularly scary in the sense of, like, you know, even if faith is more or less a path and not so much a knowledge or a belief, but it's a set lifestyle that you take that leads you to God, and anything that shines or tries to deviate you from faith is wrong. And if it's science, then it's wrong. And if it's, you know, ethical judgment, then it's also wrong as well. Because right. The only thing that's meant to keep you on the track is faith, and that's your direct connection to God. So I guess what I was just saying is I got a lot of different definitions. It didn't seem like any of them were particularly limited, and all of them had great impacts on not only just their belief system, but on how they would treat other people, how they'd interact with other people, the consequences of their own actions, the way how they raised their kids, the way how they participate in society. It was far-reaching, and I feel like words like limitations, or like myself with limitations, words could benefit from having limited senses or limited context as well.
Yeah, I agree. I thought of a few limitations while you were talking, if it matters. Now, are we already past that?
Enlighten us.
Well, I have a limitation of how fast I can run, how far I can run, how tall I am, how long I'll live. Just all kinds of limitations now that I got to thinking about it.
Those are serious limitations. I have the same limitations as well as a human being.
Right.
Do you feel like any of those make you a better person?
Make me a better person? Well, my knowledge of my... of the fact that I'm going to die sometime, morality, I guess, tries to make me enjoy this life more, do the things that I want to do now rather than put them off, enjoy the people that I love, make sure that I let them know that I love them. That's a limitation that brings great joy to me and makes me live a better life. And, well, the limitation on my income makes me a better person. It makes me more smart about how I spend it, I guess.
So if you were referring to, like, even your finances, because, and unless it's been holding back from me, unless if you're like a multi, you know, gazillionaire,
mm-hmm.
The fact that you have a limited amount of money means that you have to choose the things that are most precious for you
right.
to buy.
That's true.
And that gives them a little bit more value than someone who could just, you know, flippantly buy them, dispose of them as they please.
Right.
Like, the car you have is maybe more special to you by virtue of the fact that
you had to save for 3 years to get it.
And saved up for it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I agree.
It's almost in a weird sense good that you didn't have, or how would I put it? The value that you place in things is oftentimes better or more enhanced just by virtue of a limited amount of time that
right.
you may have with
it. Or the rarity.
Or a limited number of...
Yeah.
The limited number of funds that you could have used to get it, or just the fact that you're a limited person and maybe somewhere down the line your paths will separate and you just really appreciate the time that you have with each other, even if it's something as silly as like a pet cat that you got
right.
a few months ago.
Uh-huh.
I feel like limitations are a great thing, and I just reiterate a point. It would just be a shame if I had to live in a world where I had zero limitations, because not only would I not have as much value, as far as I can understand, in appreciating the things that I have. But I also want to have the opportunity to improve. And I think improvement's also as important as my limitations. Do you have ideas of ways that you can improve?
Me? No.
Yeah.
Well, I...
give me one. Give me something. Work with us.
Well, I have a job, and my job is working with SQL. I could learn more about SQL. I could be a better data manager. I could learn more about the operating systems on the computers that I'm working with. I could try to be a better DJ. I mean,
Look at us. We're working. Yeah, we're working on it.
I meet with the atheists every week, and a lot of times I meet with people who are on the fence, and I like to be able to answer their questions about atheism and my take on religion, and do it knowledgeably, so that they have good reason to believe what I'm saying, and it's based in reason and science and good judgment. You know, there are a lot of areas for improvement.
I agree. I think I would like to improve the way that I can more easily explain the benefits of just rational thought to people in a way where they're engaged, but also realize that they can use the things that I'm saying in all the capacities of their life as well. Because I can ask a question and set it up so that we're talking about, like, sports or movies, where I make it very clear that, you know, hey, you know, obviously if you were going to do something like this, you would need proof for it, right? It's like, yeah, of course. I always accept proof. It's like, it's way better to have evidence for something than just believing something on your gut or having feelings or just reading it in one book, right? It's like, yeah, of course. But I know I can't stray into a religious context because once I do that, the self-defense mechanisms kick on. And a lot of people, when you start to shake their most fundamental beliefs, get immediately defensive or try to shift their way into taking whatever you're saying as a direct defense towards them or a direct challenge towards them, anyway, where they don't have to look at it themselves on your side and realize, man, I should have asked these questions a long time ago.
Right.
And it's a big thing. So I wish I had a more easy way of doing that. And unfortunately, I don't think there is, but there is a process that is getting better towards having regular conversations with people who are believers. And like I said, I participate with the Street Epistemology Group. They have access page on Facebook. They have a group on Facebook. We mostly just write and talk and write blogs or record conversations with the interviewer as a participant. We hold interviews
right. Where
we talk about, you know, hey, I'm not a believer. You are. If you are, would you mind telling me about your faith, walking me through it? I'd really like to know more about it.
Well,
and
you,
it's not a challenging.
You mentioned Street Epistemology, but you just went right on by it. You might want to back up to it for just a second and tell the audience what it means.
Oh,
what it
sure.
Is.
Absolutely. So Street Epistemology is it's a method developed originally by Peter Gabosian. He wrote a book on how to basically make atheists. And it's a tongue-in-cheek term, but it's really a very interesting method of not challenging a person who you're talking to defend their faith, but rather giving them an opportunity to have the chance to ask themselves questions where they wouldn't normally ask, and particularly with a stranger. And the whole system is more or less just give them the opportunity to express themselves, genuinely listen to them, hear what they have to say, and then show them if they get to a point where they show that their belief or something they say is based on shaky foundation, just ask them a question where they can at least be aware or analyze, hey, what would be a better alternative to this particular reason that I hold my faith?
It's basically
because the whole concept is
the Socratic method.
Yeah, exactly. You just approach them with a Socratic method. You're only asking questions. And the whole instance is you just want them to believe in things for good reasons. It doesn't matter what they believe. And as long as they use good reasoning, it doesn't matter where the conversation goes. You just want to be able to help them out. And you may learn a lot from the process, too, but what you ultimately ends up is the conversation typically goes towards faith. And the thing about faith is that it generally doesn't have a good foundation and place a lot of beliefs in. It doesn't have a lot of good limitations to it. Like I said, it could be applied to a lot of different things, literally everything. And and because people who believe in different gods both use faith, why or how can someone who's looking at these two different people who are believing in different gods using the same thing come to the conclusion that faith alone is a good means of getting to the right God.
Right.
So
you
can ask questions like that.
Well, the problem to me is that with faith is there's nothing you can't believe on faith. There's nothing, there's no test for truth. You can believe any true thing or any wrong thing or any false thing and claim faith. There's no limit, talking about limitations, to what you can believe using faith.
It has very poor limitations. It's an unlimited crutch for belief.
Yeah.
You can literally have that and believe in literally anything, or state that your position's on anything. And even if it's counterintuitive or two counter proposals, you can have faith in both of them.
Right.
It seems like because it's so easily applied, it has no value because it can be limitlessly applied to everywhere.
Yes. We're at the bottom of the hour now. I think I'm going to take a station identification break. This is WOZOLP 103.9 FM in Knoxville, Tennessee. We're going to take a very short break, and we'll be back in just a little bit. Write this number down, 865-333-5937. If you want to call in and join the conversation, that's 865-333-5937. And let's see how this works. Ty, I'm going to use the phone to play the music and the bumper, basically. So I won't be talking to you until we get back.
All right.
That didn't work very well. I guess maybe because you were still on the line. But that's fine. I'd rather have you than the message. Let me bring up the text here so that I can read off about the different groups here in Knoxville, Tennessee. Sorry about that. I was getting away from the microphone a little bit. Let's see. Well, I hate not being able to use the computer and having to use my phone instead. First, if you're interested in groups in Knoxville, Tennessee that are atheists or free thought, I would start off with the Atheist Society of Knoxville. It's founded in 2002. November marks our 15th year. Atheist Society of Knoxville, ASK, now has nearly 700 members, and you can find them online at knoxvilleatheist.org. Or you can go directly to a meetup. They have meetups every week, and look for the Knoxville Atheists there. It's at, it's in person. If you want to go in person, it's every Tuesday night at West Hills Flats and Taps on Kingston Pike near West Town Mall, where we get together for food, drink, and conversation. Everyone is welcome, as long as you don't preach, proselytize, provoke, or punch. And thank you to Matt Dillahunty for that. Another large free thought group here in Knoxville are the Rationalists of East Tennessee. They've been around for about 20 years now. RET has biweekly presentations and discussions on Pellissippi State Campus near Hardin Valley Road. They meet the first and third Sundays in Goins Administration Building Cafeteria Annex. And if that's too complicated, just go to the rationalist.org or rationalist.org website, click on upcoming events, and just follow the signs once you get on campus. There's also the Sunday Assembly, which is a group that started in England just a couple of years ago and spread around the world. It's a no-God church for those who have had enough of religion but still like the fellowship of a church-type gathering. They only meet once a month, though. It's on the fourth Sunday downtown near the fairgrounds in the International Building. And then there's the Secular Student Alliance, which has programs to give camaraderie and community to any free-thinking high school or college students who would like to be involved in the free thought movement or who would just like to find other free thinkers to hang with. Everybody needs like-minded friends, and atheists are no different. Finally, there's a newcomer to the Free Thought groups, which acts more like a singles group. The Humanists of East Tennessee meetup group, just formed a few years ago, meet many times a month for dinners, hikes, movies, and swimming, picnics, things like that. You can find them on Meetup as well. That's the Humanists of East Tennessee. Earlier in the show, we mentioned about the Atheist call-in TV show. It's called Free Thought Forum. And you can see it every Tuesday between 5 and 6 on Comcast Channel 12 or Charter Channel 192. If you don't have cable, you can watch it streaming online at ctvknox.org. You can also find an archive of some of the shows on YouTube where a fan has been posting them. Just search for three words, Free Thought Forum Knoxville. Also, if you're interested in getting on, involved in the TV or the radio show, just come to an Ask Meetup or RET Meetup and talk to us about it. You could be our next co-host or guest. And remember, if you want to call in this show, the number in Knoxville is 865-333-5937. Phone lines are open, and you're welcome to call in anytime. And back to you, Wombat. Where did we leave off?
Okay, so we talked about limitations today and why they're useful. I think limitations are useful because, one, they're the first indication of what I can use to improve myself. Improving myself is always better. It's by definition better.
Oh, really?
To improve yourself.
Yep, I agree.
Improve. I think.
Yeah. The word itself.
Yeah. I think improving is great because I get to learn new things. I get to challenge myself. I get to set goals for myself. I get to just generally be a better person each day as long as I know what my limitations are. I'm willing to recognize them and see them for what they are, actually a boon rather than a bad thing in my life.
Uh-huh.
We talked about both of our limitations today, and we tried to apply those things to the concept of an all-powerful, perfect God and how a God like that wouldn't necessarily have the ability to improve because that God would already be perfect, which is kind of a detrimental thing considering that God's supposed to be the epitome of everything that's good. It seems to be lacking because that God just doesn't have the ability to surprise itself or learn new things or make mistakes and grow from it and reflect on things that it did wrong and change for the better. Like, those are all beneficial things, not just for the human condition, but truly for just being an existing thing, period. It's a useful thing.
Yeah.
So we went back and forth on some of our limitations. We talked about means of how we're going to improve. Maybe we could talk about the concept of a God that wasn't perfect. What would that look like, and would you be more willing to, I guess, believe in a God like that or worship a God like that that's a little bit more human? What do you think?
Well, I think that mankind has been worshiping human-like gods for millennia. Think of the Norse gods or the Greek gods. They all have their limitations. They were like a... It was like praying to a soap opera. There were so many interacting different gods who had different limitations and specialties that, you know, they had many, many strange stories play out, I guess I should say. So I don't think it's a strange idea to think of gods with limitations.
Okay. Oh, you're right. So, yeah, there's a lot of different kinds of Greek gods, Roman gods, all of which have, like, particular weird Achilles heels
right.
About them, or maybe they're so angry that they just can't think straight, or maybe they're a bit too vindictive, or maybe they have too much hubris that, like, comes and ends up getting them killed or replaced by a more powerful god, or their son of their some sort of progeny of some sort.
Right.
We have stories like that all the time. Then I guess if you were to conceive of one right now, or if you can point to one in literature or some such, what do you think is the standout as a good example of, you know, let's toss away our, you know, most popular gods right now. If you're going to worship anything based on just the fact that it's a personable being that's capable of improving, pick this thing, this god.
You're saying you want me to come up? You want me to come up with one? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Well, who was it? Mark Twain said, I think he said, societies have many gods. It's because the raw materials are so cheap and easy to come by. I guess I could just make one up, but I could also just pick one out of the air.
Sure.
Think of, I don't know, Mercury.
And you can apply any kind of futures you want on them. I think there's a lot of good examples, actually.
Sure.
But I'm kind of a nerd.
Yeah. Well, today is Wednesday, so let's go with Woden. That's a, what is it, a Norse god?
Okay.
And I don't really know much about him, but he's not a very powerful god, I wouldn't think, because he certainly wasn't the
not
chief
particularly.
God.
You said Odin?
Woden.
Woden?
Yeah.
I don't know who this is. Tell me about him.
Isn't Wednesday named after a god named Woden? I don't have my computer up, so I can't look at
it. I'm learning from you.
Okay.
Let's talk
about Thursday, then. Thursday.
Okay.
We all know Thor. He's a popular
name. I know
movie.
Thor.
Yeah. Comic books and all that. He can't fly, but he makes up for it by swinging his hammer real hard and throwing it and holding on to it, which is kind of strange. But he's immortal. He means he doesn't have a limitation in that direction. But he has a limitation in what he can see and hear. He doesn't have super vision or super hearing or anything. He's just very strong and very tough. But he's got a lot of limitations. I feel like a comic book kid, you know, talking about their heroes.
Sure, but isn't that really what almost all of this is, in a sense?
Yeah.
Like, you have a figure, and you idolize them to an extent.
Uh-huh.
The only difference between the two of us is that we come at it with recognition that we're talking about fictional characters.
Mm-hmm.
But because of that, we can still learn from... Are you still there?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, but because of that, we can still learn from characters like Thor. We can find things that are good about him and say, hey, I like his strength, I like his tenacity, despite the fact that his brother is his major enemy, he still loves his brother and is willing to make sacrifices in order to make sure he's safe,
right.
Like that.
Yeah.
I can find that as a very compelling figure and apply those things to my life to get past my own limitations. Perhaps my own sibling rivalries. I can use a story like that to improve myself as a person.
Right, right.
Thinking
about God, Yahweh, the God of Christianity and Judaism, and I believe it's the same God in Islam. They all build on the same Abrahamic beliefs. He has no limitations. He's omni everything. And one of the things that makes himself contradictory is that he knows everything, so he would know what everybody on earth is going to do, every decision they're going to make from now on forever, either that or he doesn't know everything. So he knows everything that somebody's going to do. Therefore, that means we have no free will. Now, if he knows everything in the universe, then he knows what his thoughts are going to be in actions. His thoughts and actions going down to eternity. He knows everything. He knows his own thoughts and his own actions. That means he has no free will. So he's self-contradictory.
It sounds more like you're describing it as like the villain in a comic book series more than anything else.
Yeah.
Like the Mr. Brain or know-it-all or the guy who's the puppet master who's just like, I control everything, I know everything, and I know every rule to break every means of physics.
Right.
I've made the rules. Yeah. I'm the architect.
Yeah.
Welcome to my game.
Right. And how could a being like that even have needs? You know, I mean, how could he want anything?
True. And I think that's a powerful statement. Like, how can a being like that need anything? He doesn't need anything, as is described. So then the question becomes, you know, well, then what's the point of the fact that he's made beings that actively participate in suffering?
Mm-hmm.
What is
right.
the value of that to him if he doesn't need it and the people don't want to have experience that?
Right.
I mean, even if it's a test for... some show of his of love towards that being, you know, that God that's all powerful.
Yeah.
That being already knows the outcome of the test, so it just seems like all the suffering is for some sort of superficial test, popularity test for himself. It seems like it's just one big cyclical, you know, how do I put it, self-gratifying chamber.
That's not even counting the suffering that he causes. I mean, in the Bible, he gave how many people plagues? He gave the Israelites, his own chosen people, 40,000 of them or something like that, plague because David took a census. You know, he didn't even punish the person who did the wrong. He punished, you know, thousands of people who were I can't think of the word, innocent of any wrongdoing for that purpose. But anyway, how many people has he killed? He killed the entire population of the earth, you know, for what? Choosing evil when he gave him free thought? I mean, free will? How is it free will if you've got a gun to your head, you know?
The whole concept is he's particularly harsh, and he is self-admitting as very jealous. And normally we would say, you know, here's just some of the attributes that could probably serve as limitations that might be grounds for him to be more compassionate, more loving later on. But the whole concept is if we believe the Bible 100%, like if we believe that is truly the manifest
and
many do. Inspired word of God,
right.
Then you have this issue where God is already perfect from day one, or literally second one, it's the second one,
yeah.
And he doesn't change. And so if he's perfect when he says he's jealous, then that's a perfect being that we should all strive to be. We should try to live our lives to be just as jealous as God, to be just as harsh as God would be, mm-hmm. to be just as, you know, dispassionate towards the suffering he's caused mm-hmm. in our own lives. He's because to set himself up as a role model that all of us need to aspire to, because what's more better if you're a Christian being godlike,
right.
You know?
Mm-hmm. But they forget all the cruelty that he inflicts on the earth. I mean, I'm talking about what this God would have done or has if he had existed and the Bible were true. You know, we as atheists don't believe that he ever existed, so he never did anything wrong. It's just the stories in the book conflict with the ideas that are being sold to you by preachers. You know, that God is good and wants
sure.
the best for you and would never harm you, and he loves you more than any parent ever loved a child. I don't know how many times I heard that. But if you read the Bible, that's not the case, huh?
Right. I'm talking about suffering, yeah. It's why is there so much suffering allowed by God in that Bible? Even if there's like some sort of like holy, you know, test of some sort or some immaculate mm-hmm. knowledge or some sort of like game plan or first sin rule, we're dealing with a God who made the rules in the first
right,
place, a
right.
God who was capable of changing any parameter he wanted in the world and decided, no, I want humans to feel pain this much. I want their nerve endings to, like, strike them in such a way that they're in agony mm-hmm. when you do this to them and when you uh-huh. do that to them, and when you don't do this to them, it feels good, but when you do this, it hurts really, really bad. He twisted, he made, if you believe the Bible, he made each one of those decisions and then put this in a world where those things that hurt us are available to us.
Yeah.
And
knowing perfectly
and
well the consequences of his actions, because he knows everything.
Sure, and the direct consequences of his actions in the book led to more harm, needless harm, more tragedy, more hurt than probably any single other entity if you were to take the Bible as a historical truth, than any other being known to man on the face of the earth. The only
yeah.
issue with this, it's certainly a point that could be deducted towards, hey, this is a limit that you need to improve on. You clearly have an issue. But God admits himself to be perfect. And if you were to take the Bible literally, along with all the other stories, you have to accept that as a truth as well. I like to think of characters that have a bit more of a vulnerable and less destructive
yeah.
aspect
yeah,
to them.
Really.
And Thor is a good example. I mean, Thor has a literal God, at least even Marvel's Thor. You know, there's points where he's really funny. There's points where he messes up, he blunders, he says the wrong things, he's lit too loud. But he learns from it, and he values the humans that eventually become his friends
yeah.
and the teammates that he works around. And even when he's not invited to all the parties, like since he wasn't at Civil War,
uh-huh.
yeah. he does feel genuine joy if you've seen like trailers of the latest movies he's in. When he sees his old friends and when he has an opportunity to help them, and I feel like that comes from a point of value that he has with these friends who he knows he doesn't necessarily have a lot of time with because he's immortal and they're not.
Right.
And because these are beings that improve and add value to his life because he knows he has a limited amount of time with them and he has limited ability to help them in the first place. So when he gets that chance to do it, it's all the more worthwhile
yeah.
to do so.
Yeah. And so often he comes up against a bad guy that's about as powerful as he is, so he meets
yeah.
his limitations that way, and he has an opportunity to excel or fail, which is a limitation right there, which if he succeeds, then he feels better about himself. He gains talents. He gains skills that he may not have known he had.
I also like the concept of this hammer in that yes, he's strong, yes, he's powerful, but a lot of his, you know, source of, you know, oh, it's his magical, you know, aura, his armor, his the far immense strength that he's capable of wielding comes from that hammer, you know, Thor's hammer. It's a magically imbued weapon, Ors ran by Ors in Odin's, you know, kingdom that he took from giants, if you're really deep into the lore. But that hammer, if he lost the hammer, if he wasn't deemed worthy enough to maintain the hammer, he wouldn't be able to pick it up. And when he's not able to do that, he has no power anymore. He's basically just an immortal man. Right. And I just find that so great that every single time he picks up that hammer, he does so because he's lived a life that has led him to be deemed worthy of wielding such immaculate power. And there's no such test for that for God, because, you know, he's perfect. He just does whatever he wants, whatever he wants.
Uh-huh. No
but
limit.
Thor has a constant litmus test.
Mm-hmm. Hey, what? I'm sorry, about the litmus test, what did you say?
No, he has a limit set of, are you using my power appropriately or not?
He has to live up to a certain level of morality.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. He has a standard that's not set by himself, but one that deems him to be a superhero in the first place.
Yeah.
Like, you have to be so good to wield me. And that's a huge, great thing, because all you have to do is see him flying through the air, and you're like, oh, he's doing all right. He's doing okay because he's towing the line. He's towing the line.
Yeah.
He's doing good.
Yeah.
If I can throw my two cents in.
Sure.
I would love to see. So he's not technically a god, but Superman has always been one of my major heroes.
Mm-hmm.
And I find him
particularly
captivating.
Uh-huh.
I find him particularly captivating because, like, the Judaic version of God, you have basically man with all the bells and whistles, like Jesus, for example. And in comparison to Jesus, you have, for example, a human being or something that looks like a human being that has all the powers of the deity that's literally limitless. Superman has no limits. He can jump as high as he needs to. He can fly as fast as he needs to. He can make up laser vision. He can blow things out of his ice wind out of his mouth. He can spin around the world and throw back time if he needed to.
Yep.
But despite all of his powers, he doesn't ask people to worship him. He doesn't ask people to follow him. He doesn't ask people to believe in his father. Mm-hmm. He goes out of his way to just help people as much as he possibly can.
Right.
And he's not purposely dying on a cross for sins for himself in a strange loophole to make up for rules that he made up for in the first place.
Yeah.
His primary interest is just what can I do to reduce harm around me?
Right.
Because I don't like suffering.
Mm-hmm. No, that's a great goal, and he certainly lives through it. I mean, lives to that end in the books and in the movies and all that. No, I've always thought he was a great, great role model for American kids and for kids all over the world. One thing that they do with Superman, though, in the comic books and TV shows and all that, it seems like every time they put him into a story, he ends up learning something new about himself that he couldn't do before, and now he can do it. Like the movie where he didn't know he could go back in time, and he did. There were TV shows where he learned to pass through walls. You know, it's just like one thing after another. Like, there's no end to his power, but he's constantly learning new traits about himself and learning new things about himself. So that's pretty cool in itself.
It's cool to improve.
Yeah, yeah.
And it seems like his improvements have no limits in their own right. So it seems
one per show.
It's one per show. But overall, there seems to be no cap to his power. And yet, time and time again, Superman comes in not to lord over people.
Right, turns down praise, turns down any reward.
To protect
and
serve those around him. And he doesn't ask for a cent in return, doesn't ask for 10% of your paycheck, doesn't ask for your soul, doesn't even ask for a thank you. He does it because he knows it's the right thing to do, and that's all that needs to be.
And you don't need religion for that.
You don't need religion for that. He's not selling you his books. He's not selling you his holy water or anything like that.
Right.
He's just there to help you and go back to his own job and then work his job as a journalist. Well, he got a degree in it, whatever.
Yeah. He's shows that all you need is human capacity and empathy to know, recognize suffering in others and do something about it. And, you know, you don't, like I say, you don't need a God to tell you to do that. You just need to identify with your fellow man.
Exactly. And I think if you were to look at these, if you were to look at other examples we brought up, like the Judaic version of God, whether, you know, you're Islamic or Jewish or Christian, and then compare them to gods that we've created ourselves, to other gods that, whether you call them false gods or just like examples we brought up, whatever you want to call it. So you have the Judaic versions of God, you have Superman, and you have Thor, and you have kids. You know, you have our kids. Mm-hmm. Who would you want these kids to look at as a figure of who I should try to inspire myself to be more like?
A good example,
you know?
Right.
Would you pick, you know, the being that kills all the babies around the planet by drowning them to death?
No.
You know, or it says, hey, I love everybody except for the gay people I made. Mm-hmm. I know I made them gay, but hey, they're going to hell and they will burn for all of eternity in a lake of fire that I purposely made just to burn them.
Right. And by the way, or, a lot of people are thinking that, you know, you're talking about Old Testament. When you're talking about burning cities and flooding the earth, you are talking about Old Testament. But when you're talking about heaven and hell, Jesus brought that. That is not
right.
Part of the Old Testament. The Old Testament is the Jewish holy book, and they didn't believe in an afterlife per se. Mm-hmm. It was meek and mild Jesus who brought hell into the consciousness of the Christian movement.
Sure. And, yeah. Exactly. And again, like, even if you were to just pick from the New Testament, that's where we have our revelations. And if you want to go into real crazy town, not crazy town, I should be more polite. If you want to go into the weird ends of the Bible, dip into Revelations, because New Testament's a cakewalk compared to what happens over there. And, uh-huh. And no one ever talks about it because they know to stay away from it. But really, like, let's take the salvation or the Jesus Christ issue, a God coming down in human form and letting himself be brutally, you know, killed, speared, and then buried alive and then brought back as some sort of means of atonement as mm-hmm. a human sacrifice
yeah.
for rules that he invented, compared to Superman, who's just willing to, like, oh, do you need help with your homework? I'll help you out with your homework. Is there a bank being robbed? Let me see if I can fix that, too. Oh, is there someone falling off a cliff? I'll help that. I don't need to be thanked. I'm just doing this because, you know, Superman's my job. I'm trying to help out with everyone. And it's cool that you guys look up to me, but I got a job to do myself. I'm a reporter. See you later. Or even Thor, who's like, you know, I'm a challenged warrior. I'm here to fight against evil. I'm doing the best that I can, and I'll work with other people if necessary because I need help. But I'm willing to do whatever I can in the name of good because that's what Thor is supposed to do, you know? And this
right.
hammer gives me the right and the authority to, not the necessarily authority, but the ability to help people. And that's all I need this power for, is to help people. Like, you have three really good, you have three examples, and two of them are the only good ones that I can imagine for kids to follow.
Hold on.
For the productive society.
Yeah. Hold on a second, please. Hello, this is Free Thought Forum. You're on the air.
Hey, this is Pan calling about the computer.
Okay, you are on the air, though. The Windows, it says getting Windows ready, do not turn off your computer. And that's
yeah,
still
but
on
it said
air.
That for like 40 minutes.
Yes.
So you need to, I say...
Slam dunk it?
Yes. Hard reboot it. Manually turn the power off. Wait a couple of seconds. Turn it back on.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah, we'll do it.
Hello, Knoxville.
Hello, Knoxville.
From Nashville.
Oh, very good. I'm trying to find the on-off switch. Is it in the back, you know? I'm not familiar with it.
There may be one on the front. There may be one on the back where the main power cord comes in at the top.
Okay. All right. Okay, thanks. I'll go ahead with the show and see what I can do.
All right.
Thanks. Okay. And that took us pretty much out of the loop there. Ty, if you're listening, call, and I'll play a song in the meantime. Mm-hmm. Sure I will. nothing like dead air. Still trying to get this thing to go. Yeah, I'm trying. Do you know where the switch is?
You were on the phone.
Yeah.
Not sure. I would say that might be it.
Oh,
there
it is.
Oh, okay. Might have to hold it down.
Yeah. It says do not turn off. Yeah. We're breaking the commandment on that. Okay, it's off. And we're living on the frontier right now, I tell you. We're turning off the computer when it said, do not turn off. But nothing ventured, nothing gained. And we'll leave it off for a few seconds and try it back. And my music is not playing from my phone. Okay. This is WOZOLP 103.9 FM in Knoxville, Tennessee. We're at the top of the hour. It's 8 o'clock. And this is Shelley Siegel with Saved.
Say that I need to be saved. Say with me the dip. God, his way.
Let's go.